Some stories don't begin the way we expect them to. There are no flashing lights, no frantic voice on a 911 call, no yellow tape strung across the doorway while neighbors gather on a lawn. Some stories begin quietly. They begin in a hallway between classes, on the small glowing screen of a phone, inside a group chat that most of the people involved have already scrolled past and forgotten. They begin in a moment so small it seems impossible that anyone would ever remember it, until it becomes the only thing anyone remembers. Every year, millions of children walk through school doors carrying weight that no one can see. Some are worried about a test. Some are wondering whether they'll make the team. And some are walking and already bracing for the sound of laughter that will follow them down the hall, wondering whether today will be the day someone posts something cruel, or the day everyone decides, quietly and all at once, to pretend they don't exist. Most of us can close our eyes and picture someone from our own school who was treated that way, someone we watched it happen to, someone we may have said nothing to defend. Very few of us ever imagine those ordinary, forgettable moments could grow into a conversation that swept across an entire country. But in the autumn of 2023, the death of 15-year-old Aubrey Wyatt did exactly that. Almost overnight, the internet filled with videos, with accusations, with theories and names and demands. Millions of strangers became convinced they knew precisely what had happened and precisely who was to blame. Others warned that the story was moving far faster than the facts. Some called for justice, some called for patience, and some simply grieved for a teenager whose life had ended long before it should have. Tonight, we are not here to repeat rumors. We are not here to hand down verdicts through viral clips. We are here to look carefully at what is known, to separate what has been documented from what has only been imagined, and to remember the life of a young person whose story became far larger than she could ever have known. This is the story of Aubrey Wyatt. Welcome to Among Monsters. Every case we uncover reminds us of the same uncomfortable truth. Monsters rarely look the way we expect them to. Sometimes they arrive through violence, sometimes through deception, sometimes through a slow, patient cruelty that wears a person down one small wound at a time. And sometimes, the hardest part isn't recognizing the monster at all. The hardest part is watching how easily grief, anger, and misinformation braid themselves together until no one can tell them apart. Tonight's episode is different from many we tell here. This is not a homicide investigation. It is not the story of a killer stalking the dark. It is the story of a young girl whose death set off an emotional, national reckoning about bullying, accountability, mental health, and the enormous power and the very real danger of social media. Because this story involves a minor, we are going to move carefully. We will hold tightly to what is documented, and we will name clearly the difference between what is known and what has only been claimed. Let's begin. Before millions of people knew her name, Aubrey was simply a teenager growing up in the American South. The people who loved her have described someone who wanted what most young people want, to be close to the people she cared about, to belong. Like anyone her age, she moved through the ordinary landscape of adolescence. Friendships and schoolwork, sports, and the endless shifting social weather of being 15. Anyone who has survived middle school or high school understands how quickly that weather can turn. Friends become strangers. Strangers become rumors. The smallest disagreement can become everyone else's business by lunchtime. But today's teenagers face something no previous generation ever did. Years ago, the school day had an ending. When students went home, most of the arguments stayed behind. locked in the building until morning. There was a door you could close. That door is gone now. A disagreement in third period can become hundreds of comments before dinner. A rumor can circle an entire school in the time it takes to walk to the parking lot. An embarrassing moment can be captured, saved, and replayed forever by people who weren't even there. The internet does not simply hold our memories. Sometimes it magnifies our pain and hands it back to us, over and over, with no way to make it stop. Researchers have spent years studying what this does to young minds. The findings are sobering. Many young people describe anxiety, depression, loneliness, and a deep sense of isolation after sustained harassment online. There is also something particular about the age at which so much of this lands. 15 is a strange country. You are old enough to feel everything at full volume, and young enough that you have no map for any of it. A single unkind message can feel, in that moment, like a verdict on your entire worth. An adult can tell a teenager that it will pass, that none of this will matter in 10 years, and the adult will even be right. But being right is not the same as being heard, and it rarely reaches a young person standing inside the storm. And yet no two stories are the same. No single event ever fully explains why a person reaches a breaking point. Mental health is extraordinarily complex. A weave of biology, circumstance, relationships, and private struggles that even the people closest to us cannot always see. That is worth holding on to as we go. When tragedy strikes, we long for one clear answer, one clean line from cause to consequence. Life almost never offers one. By the summer of 2023, those close to Aubrey have said her life had grown harder. After her death, family members spoke publicly about their concerns. They described conflict. They described bullying. They described a daughter who was struggling in ways that frightened the people who loved her most. And when they spoke, the internet answered. Within days, social media posts began naming specific students as responsible. Those accusations spread almost instantly, jumping from platform to platform, some of the videos climbing into the millions of views. Here we have to slow down. Because while those allegations traveled far and fast, many of the specific claims attached to them were never established through official investigative findings. That distinction is not a technicality. It is the whole difference between what we know and what we have merely been told. In emotionally charged cases, rumor always outruns verification. And once a rumor has spread widely enough, correcting it becomes nearly impossible. The truth arrives late, out of breath, speaking to a room that has already made up its mind. Public officials and investigators repeatedly urged caution, asking people not to draw a conclusion from social media alone. That tension between public outrage and documented evidence would come to define nearly every conversation about Aubrey's death. But underneath all the noise, one thing stayed steady. People across the country had started talking, seriously, about bullying. Parents wondered whether their own children were suffering in silence. Teachers thought about how quickly a small conflict could turn into something cruel. Students who had never told anyone what they'd endured began, quietly, to speak. Most of them had never met Aubrey. Most never would, but they recognized something in her story anyway. Not always the details, the feeling, the ache of wanting to belong, of wondering whether anyone had noticed the weight that you were carrying, of hoping, against the evidence of the day you just survived, that tomorrow might be gentler. Something unusual happened after Aubrey died. The investigation continued, the way investigations do, slowly, methodically, out of public view. But so did millions of strangers. Social media became its own courtroom, one with no rules of evidence and no one to object. Videos appeared claiming to explain everything. Others promised hidden proof. Some creators insisted they knew exactly who was responsible. Some accused the school of a cover-up. Some pointed their followers toward officials and told them to call, to demand, to act. For a grieving family, this creates an almost impossible situation. The support of strangers can be a genuine comfort, a reminder that a child's life mattered to people far beyond her own town. But speculation reopens wounds as fast as sympathy can soothe them. A family already living through the worst days of their life suddenly finds these days dissected by millions of people who never knew them. Names spread, photographs circulate, teenagers, many of them minors themselves, find their faces discussed by strangers around the world. The internet rarely slows down long enough to ask the questions that matter. Whether the information has been verified, who first provided it, whether anyone in a position of authority has confirmed it, whether the accusations, if it happens to be wrong, could destroy an innocent person. Those questions tend to vanish beneath the heat of the moment. And that is exactly why this case still matters, because it is never only about one girl in one town. It became a story about how modern tragedy unfolds now, in public, in real time, with every phone and broadcast tower, every opinion a piece of content, every rumor gathering speed, and truth so often struggling just to keep up. When a young person dies, the first question is almost always the same: why? It's a question that comes from love, from confusion, from a grief that needs somewhere to go. It is also one of the hardest questions a human being can ever try to answer. Mental health professionals have explained patiently and for a very long time that emotional pain is rarely the product of a single cause. It grows from a triangle of experiences and relationships, biology and stress and circumstances unique to each person. There is seldom one thread you can pull to unravel the whole thing. That does not make the search for answers any less urgent. It only means the answers, when they come, are almost never simple. In Aubrey's case, her family shared publicly what they believed, that bullying had played a significant role in her suffering. Their words landed hard, and they landed everywhere. Parents across the country heard them and recognized pieces of their own children, not the exact circumstances, but the fear underneath, the uncertainty, the late-night conversations that end without resolution, the quiet dread that a child might be carrying something too heavy to say out loud. Those reactions are what lifted Aubrey's story out of one community and set it down in living rooms across the country. It stopped being a local tragedy. It became a national conversation. There's a rhyme children learn early: sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Most of us live long enough to learn it isn't true. Words leave scars that never show on the skin. A cruel comment spoken aloud lasts only a few seconds before the air swallows it. The same comment typed online can last forever. It can be screenshotted, reposted, forwarded to hundreds of classmates before the person at the center of it even knows it exists. For a teenager today, social life doesn't end when the last bell rings. The phone keeps buzzing through the evening. The group chats run past midnight. The notifications pile up faster than anyone can dismiss them. Experts describe cyberbullying as fundamentally different from the bullying older generations knew. And the difference is this: there is often nowhere to escape it. Home used to be a refugee, a place where the door closed and the world stayed outside. Now the same device a young person uses to feel connected to their friends can become the very thing that keeps the cruelty within arm's reach all night, every night. There is a particular cruelty in the performance of it. When something painful happens in person, memory softens it over time. The edges dull. You can tell yourself it wasn't as bad as it felt, but a screenshot never softens. It sits there, exactly as sharp as the day it was made, ready to be pulled up and relived on command. A young person can be reminded of the worst moment of their week at any hour by anyone with a single tap. There is no forgetting when the record refuses to fade. That doesn't mean every disagreement between teenagers is bullying. Conflict is part of growing up. Friendships shift. Feelings get hurt, and most of the time mended. But repeated harassment, deliberate humiliation, targeted exclusion, and steady messages that you are unwanted can carve wounds that don't close on their own. Those realities have pushed schools and counselors and families across the country to rethink something fundamental: how they respond and how quickly, when a young person finally works up the courage to ask for help. As Aubrey's story spread, most people met it the way we meet nearly everything now: in a short video, on a small screen, in the span of a minute. Many of those videos were made with real care. Many of those videos were made with real care. The creators urged kindness. They asked their viewers to check on the people they loved. They shared resources and phone numbers and reminders that no one is as alone as they feel. But others took a different path. They presented guesses as certainties. They named individuals. They claimed inside knowledge. They stitched scattered fragments into stories that no one had confirmed and no one could. This is one of the defining problems of our age. Information travels instantly. Verification takes time. And when emotion is running high, patience is the first thing to disappear. A law enforcement investigation follows evidence. It moves slowly on purpose. Social media follows engagement, and engagement rewards speed, outrage, and certainty. The three things that are hardest to trust. The gap doesn't always come from bad intentions. Most people genuinely wanted justice for Aubrey. Most creators sincerely believed they were helping. But sincerely is not the same thing as accuracy. Good intentions have never once guaranteed the truth. And for a family already carrying an unbearable loss, misinformation doesn't ease the pain. It deepens it, and then it repeats. As word spread, grief spread with it. First through the town, then far beyond it. Students, parents, neighbors, and people who had once met Aubrey offered their condolences. Many of them spoke about the same thing: the importance of paying attention to the young people in their lives. Teachers admitted how hard it can be to recognize emotional distress in a classroom of 30 faces, when a struggling student may spend all day working to look fine. Counselors reminded parents that children often hide their pain, not because they don't need help, but because they're afraid of being judged, misunderstood, or seen as a burden to the people they love most. Those conversations did not stay in one place. Across the country, schools pulled out their anti-bullying policies and looked at them again. Families asked new questions at the dinner table. Parents wondered whether they had missed something in their son or daughter who had grown quieter than they remembered. And students who had stayed silent about their own experiences began finally to speak. In that sense, Aubrey's story pried open conversations that a great many communities had avoided for far too long. One of the hardest responsibilities in journalism, and in the kind of storytelling we do here, is admitting the boundary of what we actually know. That admission can feel unsatisfying. We are built to want to shape to things: a beginning, a middle, and an end, a reason that fits. Real life rarely cooperates. In Aubrey's case, many claims circulated after her death. Some were repeated so often by so many people that they began to sound like established fact. But repetition is not proof. A thing does not become true because a million people said it quickly. When you're looking at any tragedy, and especially one involving a child, the discipline is the same. You separate what has been verified from what has only been assumed. Not to diminish anyone's grief. Grief is real regardless of what the investigation concludes. You do it because the truth deserves protecting. The truth honors everyone involved. It protects the integrity of the investigation. It protects innocent people from accusations that could follow them for the rest of their lives. And in the end, it gives greater weight, not less, to the facts that genuinely are known. There is a real cost to getting this wrong, and it is not abstract. When a name spreads across the internet attached to an accusation that was never proven, that name belongs to a real person, often a teenager, sometimes one who had nothing to do with anything. They do not get to file a correction. They do not get an apology from millions of strangers. They carry it. It follows them into new schools, new towns, future jobs, search results that never quite disappear. In our hunger to hold someone accountable, we can create new harm faster than anyone can measure it, and we can do it to the wrong person entirely. As Aubrey's story kept unfolding in public, those lines blurred. What emerged was a complicated triangle of mourning and advocacy, speculation and anger. Every strand of it was understandable, but they were not all supported by the same evidence, and pretending otherwise helped no one. One of the hardest truths about emotional pain is how well it hides in plain sight. A person can laugh with friends in the morning, sit through class in the afternoon, smile for a photograph, and still be carrying something that no one around them has any idea is there. Teenagers especially are moving through one of the most emotionally intricate stretches of a human life. They're figuring out who they are, learning how relationships work and how they break, trying to fit in and stand out at the very same time. And they're doing all of it while their brains are still under construction, particularly the regions responsible for emotional regulation, impulse control, and the ability to imagine a future beyond this exact painful moment. That does not mean a teenager can't make thoughtful choices. It means that emotion can flood a young person in a way adults sometimes forget, having safely reached the far shore. When rejection or loneliness or humiliation arrives, it doesn't feel like one bad chapter. It feels like the whole story. Adults tend to look back on high school and remember the games, the dances, a teacher who believed in them. Teenagers are living it right now, in real time, with none of the perspective that distance eventually provides. To them, the social world is in background. It's immediate, intense, and deeply personal. And a young person in pain is often working very hard to make sure you never see it. Not out of dishonesty, but out of the kind of perspectiveness of themselves, and sometimes of the people they love. They perform the version of themselves they think is expected. They answer fine, because fine ends the conversation before it can turn into something they don't have the words for. Many of them believe deep down that their struggle is a flaw to be hidden rather than a burden that could be shared. That belief is one of the most dangerous parts of the whole thing, and it is one of the hardest to reach. For some, the people around them, a parent, a friend, a counselor, a coach, help carry them through the hardest seasons. Others struggle in silence, certain that no one would understand. That's why so many mental health professionals return again and again to the same idea. The goal is to build a world where a young person feels safe asking for help, not only in the middle of a crisis, long before one ever begins. After Aubrey died, people who had never met her felt inexplicably tied to her story. Parents pictured their own daughters, Teachers thought about the quiet student in the back row they'd been meaning to check on. Classmates replayed words they wished they had said or wished they hadn't. And many strangers were pulled back into their own past, some remembering being the target of cruelty, others admitting, with a discomfort, that they waited years to arrive, that they had once been part of it without understanding what it cost. Grief has a way of forcing reflection. Communities begin asking the difficult questions, whether something could have been done differently, whether the warning signs were there and simply missed, whether someone needed help and never received it. Those questions rarely come with clean answers, but asking them is not pointless. Asking them is often where change actually begins. Across the country, schools have kept working on bullying prevention. Districts have expanded access to counselors. Parents are being encouraged to keep the conversations with their kids open and ongoing, not only about grades and games, but about friendships and feelings and the state of a young heart. Those conversations matter for a single reason. Emotional pain grows best in silence. Compassion grows through connection. Cases like this one present a genuine challenge to anyone who tells stories for a living. Journalists, filmmakers, and yes, podcasters. There is a line to walk, and it is narrow. You want to tell an important story without causing new harm. You want to acknowledge the public's concern without repeating accusations that were never proven. You want to honor a person's life without flattening them into nothing more than the circumstances of their death. None of those come with perfect solutions, but all of them deserve to be taken seriously. Our goal here at Among Monsters has never been to simply recount the difficult things. It's to look at them responsibly. Sometimes that means saying plainly what isn't known. Sometimes it means resisting the pull toward a dramatic conclusion the evidence doesn't actually support, and that pull is strong, because a clean ending is what an audience wants. There's a temptation, in a story like this, to reach for the most dramatic version, to sand down the messy parts until the whole thing snaps neatly shut. That version always performs better. It travels farther. It feels more satisfying to hear. And it is almost always at least partly false. The honest version is slower and less certain, and it asks more of the person listening. We think that's a trade worth making. In today's world, uncertainty is unpopular. People want the answer. They want it fast, and they want it definite. But responsible storytelling sometimes requires three of the most difficult words there are. We don't know. Those words won't satisfy anyone's curiosity. What they protect is worth far more than curiosity. Aubrey Wyatt's name became known to millions, but there is countless young people whose struggles will never reach a single headline. Every single day, a school counselor sits across from a student carrying an invisible weight. A teacher notices a kid growing quieter than they used to be. A parent lies awake wondering why their once outgoing child now spends so many hours alone behind a closed door. A friend senses that something has changed and has no idea what to say. Most of those stories never become documentaries. Most never trend. And they are not 1 ounce less important than the ones that do. The people who study this urge families to watch for the shifts. A lasting change in behavior, a withdrawal that doesn't lift, expressions of hopelessness, comments that suggest a young person feels trapped or alone, or like a burden others would be better off without. None of those signs, on their own, guarantees a young person is in crisis. What they do is open a door, an invitation to a conversation that might otherwise never happen. Sometimes the most powerful thing an adult can offer a young person is a single honest question, not, "How was your day?" tossed over a shoulder, but something slower, "How are you? Really?" And then, the hard part, the listening. Not listening in order to respond. Not listening to fix everything before the sentence is even finished. Just listening. Because feeling truly heard can make a difference we may never fully measure. Even now, Aubrey's story is still being talked about. People are still searching for answers. Families are still advocating for stronger protections against bullying. Educators are still refining the programs meant to make schools safer places to grow up. And mental health professionals are still repeating the same essential reminder that prevention almost always begins long before tragedy arrives. No single policy will ever erase bullying. No single program will prevent every crisis. Anyone who promises otherwise is selling something. But every conversation counts. Every act of kindness counts. Every trusted adult who chooses in an ordinary moment to actually listen, that counts too. We like to imagine that changing the world takes something enormous. More often, it begins with something small. A classmate who chooses to include rather than exclude. A teacher who catches the sadness behind a rehearsed smile. A parent who sets the phone face down and gives a child their whole attention. Those moments almost never make the news. They may matter more than anything that does. Every story we tell here eventually reaches the place where the investigation ends. The evidence has been gathered. The reports have been filed. The headlines start to fade, the way headlines always do. But for a family, there is no final chapter. Life simply continues, which is its own kind of cruelty. Birthdays still arrive. Holidays still come. Graduations still happen for other people's children. Photographs slowly transform from casual snapshots into sacred objects, proof of moments that can never be lived again. For Aubrey's family, the loss of a daughter cannot be measured in articles or posts or view counts. It is measured in a quiet no one else sees. An empty chair at the table, a bedroom that no one has the heart to change. A future imagined in 1,000 small ways and now unrealized. Those are the realities that stay long after the public has moved on to the next story. As the months passed, the conversation continued. Some of it stayed focused on prevention. Some of it argued over responsibility. And much of it was simply people, strangers, reaching towards a family in pain and offering the only thing they had, sympathy. Opinions differed. One thing never did. A young life ended far too soon. And that truth deserves compassion long before it deserves commentary. Every difficult story leaves us with a choice. We can consume it as one more headline and move on. Or we can ask what it's trying to teach us. Maybe the first lesson is the oldest one. Words matter. What we say and what we choose not to say can echo far longer than we ever intend. Kindness is not weakness. Empathy is not optional. And for a young person, even a small gesture of inclusion can land with a force the people giving it will never know. The second lesson is about listening. Sometimes people don't need us to solve anything. They need to be heard without being judged. None of us, not parents, not teachers, not coaches, not friends, can reach another person's mind. But every one of us can help build a space where asking for help feels safe instead of shameful. And there's a final lesson. For all of us who now live so much of our lives online, slow down. Ask where a claim came from. Verify before you share. Resist the easy certainty of a viral post, because a real life is always more complicated than a 60-second video can hold. Real families deserve better than rumor dressed up as fact. When a person becomes the subject of national attention, something strange and unfair happens. Their whole identity begins to shrink down to the worst thing that ever happened to them. But Aubrey Wyatt was more than a headline, more than a case, more than a lesson in an episode like this one. She was a daughter, a friend, a student, someone whose ordinary, irreplaceable life meant everything to the people who loved her. That's worth holding on to, not because it answers any of the open questions, but because it restores the one thing that so easily gets lost in a public conversation, her humanity. No investigation can fully capture a person. No online debate can. No documentary, including this one, ever could. The people who knew Aubrey best carried the truest version of her. Those memories are theirs. They always will be. There's a reason this story reached so many people, and it isn't that everyone agreed on what happened. They didn't, and they still don't. It's that nearly everyone recognized the same thing underneath it, the simple, urgent importance of treating one another with dignity. If this episode moves even one listener to check on a friend who's been too quiet lately, if it moves one parent to start a conversation they'd been putting off, if it moves one student to choose kindness in a moment when cruelty would have been easier, then something worth keeping has come from a loss that should never have happened. We usually end this show by talking about monsters. Sometimes they're individuals who do terrible things. Sometimes they're systems that fail people who depend on them. And sometimes they're quieter than that. The isolation, the despair, the indifference that grows in dark while everyone else looks away. Whatever shape they take, confronting them always begins in the same place, with truth, with compassion, and with the willingness to care for one another before it's too late to matter. Thank you for listening to Among Monsters. If tonight's story touched something in you, consider taking a moment right now to reach out to someone you care about. A single conversation can carry more weight than you realize. And if you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of self-harm or suicide, please reach out. Talking to a trusted person or a qualified mental health professional can genuinely make a difference. In the United States and Canada, you can call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline and connect with the trained counselor any hour of any day. I'm Maya Hansen. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll see you next time here on Among Monsters.